Chapter 20. When Vicky fled and moved in with the liquidator, a professor friend recommended Axel Sullivan as a divorce specialist. Axel proved to be a fine lawyer, but there wasn't much he could do on the legal front. Vicky was gone, she wasn't coming back, and she didn't want anything from Ray. Axel supervised the paperwork, recommended a good shrink, and did a commendable job of getting Ray through the ordeal. According to Axel, the best private investigator in town was Corey Crawford, a black ex-cop who had pulled time for a beating. Crawford's office was above a bar his brother owned near the campus. It was a nice bar with a menu and unpainted windows, live music on the weekends, no unseemly traffic other than a bookie who worked the college crowd. But Ray parked three blocks away just the same. He did not want to be seen entering the premises. A sign that read Crawford Investigations pointed to stairs on one side of the building. There was no secretary, or at least none was present. He was 10 minutes early, but Crawford was waiting. He was in his late 30s with a shaved head and handsome face, no smile whatsoever. He was tall and lean, and his expensive clothes were well fitted. A large pistol was strapped to his waist in a black leather holster. "I think I'm being followed," Ray began.
"This is not a divorce."
They were on opposite sides of a small table in a small office that overlooked the street.
"No. Who would want to follow you?"
He had rehearsed a story about family trouble back in Mississippi. A dead father, some inheritances that may or may not happen, jealous siblings, a rather vague tale that Crawford seemed to buy none of. Before he could ask questions, Ray told him about Dolph at the airport and gave him his description.
"Sounds like Rusty Waddle," Crawford said.
"And who's that?"
"Private eye from Richmond. Not very good. Does some work around here. Based on what you've said, I don't think your family would hire someone from Charlottesville. It's a small town."
The name of Rusty Waddle was duly recorded and locked away forever in Ray's memory.
"Is there a chance that these bad guys back in Mississippi would want you to know that you're being followed?"
Crawford asked. Ray looked completely baffled, so Crawford continued.
"Sometimes we get hired to intimidate, to frighten. Sounds like Waddle or whoever it was wanted your buddies at the airport to give you a good description. Maybe he left a trail."
"I guess it's possible."
"What do you want me to do?"
"Determine if someone is following me. If so, who is it and who's paying for it?"
"The first two might be easy. The third might be impossible."
"Let's give it a try." Crawford opened a thin file.
"I charge $100 an hour," he said, his eyes
staring right through Ray's, looking for indecision.
"Plus expenses, and a retainer of $2,000.
"I prefer to deal in cash," Ray said, staring right back, "if that's acceptable." The first hint of a smile.
"In my business, cash is always preferred."
Crawford filled in some blanks in a contract. "Would they tap my phone, stuff like that?" Ray asked.
"We'll search everything. Get another cell phone, digital, and don't register it in your name. Most of our correspondence will be by cell phone."
"What a surprise," Ray mumbled, taking the contract, scanning it, then signing. Crawford put it back in the file and returned to his notepad.
"For the first week, we'll coordinate your movements. Everything will be planned. Go about your normal routine. Just give us notice so we can have people in place."
"I'll have a traffic jam behind me," Ray thought. "It's a pretty dull life," Ray said. "I jog, I go to work, sometimes I go fly an airplane. I go home, alone, no family."
"Other places?"
"Sometimes I do lunch, dinner. Not a breakfast guy, though."
"You're putting me to sleep," Crawford said and almost smiled. "Women?"
"I wish. Maybe a prospect or two, nothing serious. If you find one, give them my name."
"These bad guys in Mississippi, they're looking for something. What is it?"
"It's an old family with lots of stuff handed down. Jewelry, rare books, crystal and silver." It sounded natural, and this time Crawford bought it.
"Now we're getting somewhere. And you have possession of the family heirloom?"
"That's right."
"It's here?"
"Tucked away in Cheney's self-storage on Berkshire Road."
"What's it worth?"
"Not nearly as much as my relatives think."
Give me a ballpark.
$500,000 on the high side.
And you have a legitimate claim to it?
Let's say the answer is yes. Otherwise, I'll be forced to give you the family history, which could take the next 8 hours and give us both a migraine.
Fair enough.
Crawford finished a lengthy paragraph and was ready to wrap things up.
When can you get a new cell phone?
I'll go now.
Great. And when can we check your apartment?
Anytime. 3 hours later, Crawford and a sidekick he called Booty finished what was known as a sweep. Ray's phones were clear, no taps or bugs. The air vents hid no secret cameras. In the cramped attic, they found no receivers or monitors hidden behind boxes.
You're clean, Crawford said as he left.
He didn't feel very clean as he sat on his balcony. You open up your life to complete strangers, albeit some selected and paid by you, and you feel compromised. The phone was ringing.